I'm Jonathan Moore.
And I'm Colin Lamb.
And you're listening to
Press Coverage, V2's own American football podcast.
Hello and welcome to this week's rather surreal edition of Press Coverage in V2. We are taking a break from our string of interviews this week to bring you a review of the off-season's big moves and talking points, and perhaps more importantly, what that means for the 2013 NFL season. And you'll undoubtedly be delighted to hear that we aren't going to do this alone, as we have three guys who you'll probably know, I hope, to give their expertise. And with the details, here's Colin.
Yeah, thanks for the setup, Jonathan. As you say, we have three very well-known guests, and in my opinion, the finest trio in the Sky Studio for the NFL. And that is, of course, Jeff Reinbold, Neil Reynolds, and the host, Kevin Cato. How are you guys? Not bad at all. So yeah, as we say, this is fun, you know, always looking through the off-season. So I'll start with you, Neil. Obviously, you're a Dolphins fan. I mean, what do you think about the Miami Dolphins moves? I mean, they made a big shock pick in the draft. They've added some very, very well-known people in free agency. What are you thinking?
It's almost time for me to be excited by the Dolphins again. It's been a while. It's been since the days of Dan Marino. I mean, yeah, we'll wait and see how it plays out, but they addressed... when you look at any off-season, you want to try and address as many needs as you can, and you can't do it all in one off-season. I still think there's an issue at the tackle position with no Jake Long there anymore and Jonathan Martin sliding over to the left side. But look, everything else they did made sense. They upgraded the passing game. I'm not sure they needed to be quite so aggressive in the draft to go up and get Deion Jordan, but they see him being a playmaker who can do things in space. So I think everything they did ticks all the boxes apart from that offensive tackle position. Like I say, you can't have it all.
Of course, yeah. And I suppose, Kev, same question to you. Obviously, the Buffalo Bills, they've made some big moves last week alone. Obviously, they hired a new GM in Doug Whaley. They got rid of Ryan Fitzpatrick. They drafted E.J. Manuel. Some consider that a reach. What do you think about the future prospects for the Bills?
Yeah, now obviously for the first time ever there's going to be two games at Wembley later this year, and one of the teams that are coming are of course the Jacksonville Jaguars, who'll be here again the following year. I'll bring you in first, Jeff, since you've not spoken yet. I mean, one surprise maybe from the draft was the fact that they decided not to bring in a quarterback, meaning that Blaine Gabbert will get another shot at it, and they'll also start the year without Justin Blackmon, but they should get Maurice Jones-Drew back in the fold. Can you see any improvement on the Wembley-bound Jaguars' record from last year?
I think they'll be better. I really do. I think Gus Bradley's got a plan. I was, you know, if you're a Jaguars fan, let me put it this way. If you're a Jaguars fan, I think you're frustrated with Gabbert's development, but you also have to recognize what's in the draft. And I think it proved out, we said this pre-draft and some of the shows we did, that this is not a good draft. It's not especially a good draft for quarterbacks. And so they resisted the urge to take a first-round quarterback, actually to take a quarterback high. And I think that was smart for them because they have so many holes to fill. And when you look at that football team, getting Drew back is going to help them. I just think that they're in a position where they have a lot of spots that they need to work and fill. I think moving Tyson Alualu, their former first-round draft choice, out to end is going to help him be more productive. He's been a little bit of a disappointment since they drafted him first. I think that'll give him some air. I think they'll be more aggressive on defense. They've gone out and drafted big corners, big DBs, which is kind of what the blueprint for what they did in Seattle.
And the other team that's obviously coming are the Minnesota Vikings, the other home team. And they pretty much starred during round one of the draft. They traded away Percy Harvin, grabbed themselves another pick, and then they got themselves another one. And they certainly already needed help in the wide receiver department, even while Harvin was still there, you could say. And they addressed this by bringing in Cordarrelle Patterson and also Greg Jennings in free agency. Do you think those guys will give Christian Ponder the weapons he desperately needs so that the team doesn't have to continue practically solely relying on Adrian Peterson?
I think Jennings will. I'm not sold on Patterson. I think you got to know that story a little bit better. The kid was a junior college player. Now, that doesn't mean he's a bad player, but usually a kid goes to junior college and not to a four-year school because there's some sort of hole in him somewhere. And they talk about the kid's inability to learn very well and retain information. Well, in the NFL, that's one of the things that gets a lot of young guys is they can't handle the amount of information that they need to handle. On top of it, you're talking about drafting a guy who's got 43, I believe it is, catches over his college career. That's it. That's the whole body of work that he has. Now, obviously, he's a talented athlete, or they wouldn't have taken him that high. But in terms of answering the question that you asked, helping this year, I think Greg Jennings will make the impact, and I think Patterson will be a spot player who, they'll use for, kind of restricted things in the passing game where he doesn't have to make a lot of adjustments on the run. They can just let him use his athletic ability. But, I think Spielman's drafted well there. I think you look at his draft since he's been with Minnesota, he's been one of the more productive draft guys in the National Football League.
And I'll bring Neil and Kevin in this one as well. Do you think the Vikings have done enough to try and prevent from stalling at the playoff stage this time around?
I think Jeff's right with Patterson. What you have to do with him is limit how much you throw him in year one, but maybe he can be that stretch the field guy, especially if everyone's loading up to stop Adrian Peterson. But this team, then it all comes down to the guy on the centre. Christian Ponder really, really struggled throwing the deep ball last year, and it was the drop-off when he was throwing short and intermediate routes to the long ball was glaring. So, I drive Kev mad with this, but I always talk about it being a quarterback's league. I think with Minnesota this year, Adrian Peterson is undoubtedly the guy, but if they're going to find that something extra, maybe it needs to come from their quarterback, Christian Ponder.
Well, obviously, I agree with both Neil and Jeff. Jeff, from the junior college standpoint, is that if you go to junior college, you do have some problems versus going straight to a four-year school. And with Neil about the quarterback position, I don't know if Christian Ponder is the answer, but he is going to be the answer because that's who Minnesota is going to put out there. They're trying to give him some weapons, but the case of does he have the ability to take advantage of the weapons that they're trying to put out there? And that is going to be the big question with me when I look at them. I think defensively that Minnesota will still be okay. I think they've addressed that somewhat in the draft as well. But I think that you look at it, you got to go offensively with Ponder. That is the big question. I know Neil talks about the quarterback, and in this case, the quarterback is so very important. What is Christian Ponder going to bring to the party on a weekly basis?
Yeah, and obviously discussing quarterback situations in the NFL, I mean, there's one that can't be ignored, and of course that is the circus with Rex Ryan with the New York Jets. Obviously Tim Tebow's gone, David Garrard is gone, and now Mark Sanchez, obviously he's under fire, but both he and Geno Smith, the second round pick, remain. So, I mean, Neil, who do you think will be starting day one for New York Jets?
Thank you for coming to me first to talk about the Jets quarterbacks. What's Mark Sanchez doing with that Alice band in his hair for a start? I think they got themselves into a mess last year by signing Sanchez to the contract extension. I think the long-term answer they're hoping is Geno Smith. They need to find a trade partner for Mark Sanchez. I don't see him. I think he's had his shot. He's had three, four years now. Last 2 years, 52 turnovers. I think they know what they've got in Mark Sanchez. I don't think there's any improvement there to be had. But Geno Smith's not the finished article either. And Smith is Smith to me. You've got to love
watching the New York Jets, because, I mean, I'm not throwing stones from a glass house because Miami have been bad for a long time, but, you know, the Jets, they're just a circus. And Geno Smith, you know, the slide on day one of the draft, he's sitting there sulking. He threatens not to come back on day two. He fires his agent. He gives himself an F for his first NFL practice. Now he's looking at a rap star to represent him. Is he not the perfect New York Jet? I mean, I think he is. They maybe ideally would have liked David Garrard to be that quarterback for a year. That's not going to happen. So they may have to throw Smith into action sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and it's interesting you mentioned the sulking. The last two quarterbacks I can remember to look quite as disappointed or shocked as him were Brady Quinn and Blaine Gabbert, so probably not a good omen, but obviously, I'll ask you the same question, Jeff. Do you think Geno Smith is the answer, or do you think there's a slight possibility that Sanchez might get the shock start at the first game of the season? Yeah, and actually, I've got one more question for you, Jeff. This is sort of old news now, but obviously, last time you were on the show, it was before this happened. An old guy you coached, you said he was one of the most talented players you've worked with, Emmanuel Sanders. Obviously, the New England Patriots, I believe they matched the Pittsburgh Steelers' offer sheet. Were you happy to see that he stayed with the Steelers, or were you interested to see what he could do with Tom Brady? The only issue there might be, I think they drafted two guys. I think they drafted Josh Boyce from TCU and Aaron Dobson from Marshall. So I suppose it depends on their development. But as you say, Belichick likes to stack certain positions. So I think Sanders, Amendola with Brady, wow, that would be something special.
You know what? It's interesting that you talk about two guys. guys that we played against all the time, and those two young receivers that they drafted, and this is not to knock those guys, certainly, but, you know, when you compare what Emmanuel's numbers were in college and what Emmanuel's done as an NFL player, I don't think it's even close, and I'm sure if he has a good year with the Steelers, and he should, frankly, because he'll become more of a feature guy now that, with Wallace out of there, that he'll have a number of suitors when the season rolls around, the end of the season rolls around, and they get into the free agent market again.
Yeah, I just have one more question about the New York Jets before I move on, and it's about their cornerback situation. It was a story that broke not too long after the Super Bowl, and it was that Darrell Revis was on the way out, and indeed he has done, and he's wound up in Tampa Bay. Now, I'll bring you in first here, Kev. Do you think the Jets were right to let Revis go, or do you think they should have stumped up to make sure they kept the best cornerback in the business?
Exactly. That's kind of cool, that newspaper subscription. I
I think one thing that both Jeff and Kev have alluded to with the, you know, not to get stuck on the Jets, but it is interesting, is the different timetables that coaches and GMs work to. You know, John Isdig is working to a very different timetable to Rex Ryan, and that's why I share the same thoughts as Jeff and Kevin. I think Rex is in trouble. Look how consistently good, not great, but consistently good Lovie Smith has been for the Chicago Bears. Wasn't enough to save him his job after a year with Phil Emery. I think the Revis move was a long-term building block move. Other transactions the Jets are making are with a view to the long term, and Rex Ryan hasn't got time to think long term.
Well, it's interesting too, you want to play the speculation game. Where's Isaac from? Where's Isaac from? He's, you know, Bear guy, and to go further back, he's a Tampa Bay guy, which is exactly where Lovie comes from. Now, Lovie gets a year to sit out and recharge his batteries a little bit, and here you go. So that's the nature of this business. That's why, you know, guys go from being coaches and, you know, being TV guys. Jack Gruden knows the deal. So he, you know, again, it's what happens. It's part of our business.
Yeah, and obviously another team that had quite a big issue this week, and it also, I suppose, relates to Nick Saban in some ways, was Rolando McClain, the former Alabama linebacker, first-round pick of the Raiders, released by the Raiders, goes to the Ravens, and then he announces his retirement at the age of 23, which obviously shocks some people, but the fact he's had so many legal issues, I suppose, it really shouldn't be a surprise. And Nick Saban yesterday, I believe, or the day before, came out and said basically that he thinks it was respectful of McClain to retire so the Ravens have first dibs at him when he returns. Now, obviously Nick Saban was called the devil by one of his ex-coaching colleagues, but I think he has a point. I mean, are you guys shocked by the retirement of McClain?
No, not really shocked, because obviously there's issues there that I'm sure we don't know all the depth of them, but when you go from being the first round draft choice and being out of a place as fast as he got out of Oakland, then obviously there's something beyond just a miss on your physical ability in the draft. And then he go to Baltimore and then retire. I just hope whatever it is, the issues that the kid's got, that he's able to get them under control and first of all become a productive human before worrying about whether he plays in the National Football League again.
Yeah, I think he's a great move by him, his agent, whoever else is just to go away for a little while and get yourself cleaned up. You know, one thing about America and American sports, they are forgiving. If you come back and show that you can get it done, I mean, all will be forgotten. And, you know, but he has to go away and clean his act up. If he goes away and commits something else and doesn't keep his nose clean, maybe he just needs to move out of his hometown and never go back there. That might be a good idea, but that's what seems where all the problems are.
Yeah.
I think when you look at a player like this, or you can add Tyus Young to the mix as well with the Detroit Lions, who, you know, stopped for a cup of coffee in St. Louis and then was moved on. Ultimately, they haven't produced on the field either. I mean, obviously, there's lots and lots of off-field problems. But I know there's been many players over the years who've created off-field problems, but if they produce on Sundays, NFL teams find a way to live with all the other stuff. Ultimately, neither of these guys have been very good football players either. Now, part maybe that's because of everything that's been going on off the field, but yeah, you know, I agree with Kev. You know, I jokingly put out on Twitter last week, okay, he's retired, let's discuss his Hall of Fame career, because that's what we seem to do every time somebody retires. But I don't think he's fully done, and, you know, you hope he can come back. But I agree with Kevin. I think some of these guys need to be careful who they surround themselves with. Obviously, Tavon Austin is the big one who came out recently after signing with the Rams. You know, points out that, you know, suddenly everyone in Baltimore is his cousin and people are asking for money. It's a slippery slope if you go down that as a player, it really is.
You know, and so few of these guys are, you know, even a kid like McClain who comes from a program like Alabama, you know, that is used to having NFL picks, and, you know, Saban's been in the NFL. It's still very, very difficult for them to break free of, as Kevin said, the guys in his hometown, his posse, his crew, those guys that you hung with for so long, and now all of a sudden you've got money and guy that has to support everybody, and everybody's got their hand out, and it, you know, it's just, it's really a difficult thing, and all the money that the NFL spends on scouting and, you know, evaluating player psychology and, you know, their backgrounds and all those other things, it doesn't keep you from missing. And, you know, Titus Young's another perfect example of what you're talking about, a second-round draft choice that out of Boise State, a program that's known for having disciplined players, and his whole life just unravels within 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, McLean was at Oakland. On a bit of a lighter note, Manchester's own Menelik Watson was drafted by Oakland in the second round, and the UK will obviously, as a whole, be very interested to see what the future holds for him. First of all, he'll probably have to see off Caleb Barnes for the starting job at right tackle before he does anything else. But do you guys see a bright future ahead for him in the NFL?
I mean, I think he's got, you know, Jeff probably seen a lot more of him than I have. I think he's, you know, I don't know if Kevin has been, sort of been in contact with some of the people that coached him at basketball, but from just from the stuff I've seen, you know, that fast rise at Florida State, I think that just his attitude. His attitude is what you want from an NFL player. And you hear it sometimes. In fact, I think you hear it more often than not. When players get drafted, you half expect them to rest on their laurels and say, okay, I've made it to the NFL. But the really good ones, the good ones are the ones that say, now it's time to start work, and now it's time to really begin putting in the grind. And yeah, I think that's what Menelik is. I think Menelik is he didn't sort of sign up for the NFL for the headlines or the glamour or the attention. Yeah, in his own words, he said, "Well, it was time for me to go and get a job." And I think that's how he views it. The athleticism is there, could move over to the left side in the long run, but I just think the thing that jumps out for me, great story, of course, but he has a great mental attitude, which is going to serve him well in the coming years.
You know, I was up there last week. I went and spent a day at the Raider Complex and visited with the coaches, and obviously his name came up, and boy, when you talk to it was every single guy I talked to, when his name was brought up, it was just big smiles on their faces, how happy they were that he's come in with a humble approach. He's come in with a great work ethic. You know, what really makes him unique, I think, and one of the Raider coaches mentioned it, is that when you have a guy who's been through what he's been through, obviously the basketball training was tremendous for his footwork, his coordination, his ability to bend and do some of the things that an offensive lineman has to do, but the uniqueness of also having a boxing background and being hit and hitting, so the physical part of it doesn't shy away at all from the physical part. He's been through that part. And they really, really have high expectations and high hopes for the young kid. And I think Tony Sperano's gonna take it slowly with him in OTAs and minicamp. But I would not be surprised if he's not the starter on you know, opening day, and if he's not starter on opening day, that he doesn't take that job before very, very long into the season and keep it for a long time.
Yeah, and for all the jokes about the Raiders, their offensive line is actually looking really good. I mean, I think Jared Veld here, I mean, I think he must have put on about 50 pounds of muscle this offseason. He looks huge. And then, of course, you've got their centre, which I can't remember his name, actually. I think it's Wisniewski. But he's a great player, too. So maybe things are looking up for the Raiders.
Well, I think, you know, there's a lot of work for Reggie McKenzie to do at that place. They have major salary cap issues, and they have started to address those things in the offseason. I think the signing of Josh Cribbs the other day was really an interesting one to me, because there was a lot of talk about Josh Cribbs' knee and whether he was going to be able to come back off that knee. He claims he's 100%, and Bobby Abel, the special teams coach there, was awful excited. I also know that they've got their eyes on Chris Cluey, the punter that was cut by Minnesota. And again, if they can sign those two guys in the offseason, they really improve their special teams, but still a lot of holes in Oakland to fill.
The middle league thing, you know, for me, a couple things that stand out is, you know, one,
You know, last year's Super Bowl champions, the Ravens, of course, they've lost a number of their championship-winning team, especially on the defence. Ray Lewis, he's pretty much a distant memory now already. Ed Reed obviously moved to Houston soon after. And they've also lost guys like Danelle Ellerbe, Paul Kruger, Bernard Pollard. They've all gone. And they've also lost Anquan Boldin in offence. Well, they have brought in quality players as replacements, the likes of Elvis Dumervil in free agency. Then Matt Elam and Arthur Brown came in the draft. Do you think the Ravens will perhaps regret losing so many players, or do you think it was the right time to freshen things up?
I mean, I think, you know, that you got to look at it realistically. Every organization, the only one that seems to be able to avoid it is the Patriots, but every organization goes through a time when they need to reload and rebuild. Now, for the Ravens, it seems that, you know, it's kind of now is that time. I never underestimate Ozzie Newsome, their general manager, and his ability to put a football team together. And they, I think they draft well every year. Obviously, there's going to be a new team. And, you know, again, every team has its own personality. They're going to develop its own way of doing things. And, you know, Harbaugh, I think, is an outstanding coach. They've got enough players on offense. They've still got good physical players on defense. And we'll see what they're able to do. But obviously, to lose, you know, Hall of Famers like Ed Reed and you know, Lewis in the same season is very difficult.
You know, NFL teams, what you mentioned, Jeff, it's like every year who doesn't lose, you know, lose players. But I think, you know, what they're losing is the mental locker room presence. I think physically, you know, the guys that are coming in can replace a Ray Lewis or Ed Reed, because we're not talking about Ray Lewis, Ed Reed at their prime. We're talking about Ed Reed and Ray Lewis, you know, on the way out the door and such. So, you know, I think that, you know, they lose, you know, where is that mental approach going to be replaced, and how are you going to replace that with the guys that are already there or the new guys that are coming in? For me, that's the, you know, the biggest thing of how, you know, you pull this team back together, Harbaugh and, you know, Ozzie and everyone else that's involved. How do you pull this team back together where, because for me, the strength of the Baltimore Ravens last season was mental more than physical.
I think both guys are, I think they're right to highlight Ozzie Newsome. And it's a guy who built, you know, not one but two Super Bowl champions 12 years apart, different head coaches, different quarterbacks, completely different rosters apart from Ray Lewis. That was the only holdover from the first one. So, you know, in Ozzie we trust, and I think they've done it again. I think, you know, he finds diamonds in the rough like Danelle Ellerbe, but then he knows when not to overpay for them. And now it's Arthur Brown's turn to try and step in there. You know, the leadership is an issue, but I think in terms of players, I think Baltimore have restocked well. I think they still try and get their type of play. You know, I've seen things that describe Matt Elam as the most violent player in the draft. Well, you know, doesn't that fit the Ravens' psyche and their mentality? That's what they want to be. They want to smack you in the mouth, and then they want to, you know, they want to beat you in other ways. The only area I would say, because I think, you know, they've replaced Paul Kruger with Elvis Dumervil. Upgrade for me, absolutely 100% an upgrade. The only one I think that's been lost and not fully replaced is look at what Anquan Boldin did in the playoffs. Have they got that guy who can work in the slot, move the chains, make the tough catches when he's completely covered like a blanket? That's what Boldin was in the last postseason.
Yeah, and it's interesting you mentioned Boldin, of course. The 49ers, and I'll admit I'm sort of biased as a fan of the 49ers, I've got quite a big interest in what they've been doing. But one of the biggest sort of impacts on their season was the loss, or the trade, I suppose, of Alex Smith, the quarterback, to the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, the Chiefs, obviously, they have the pieces there, it seems. I mean, if you look at most teams, you look for a decent offensive line. They drafted a tackle number one overall. You look at maybe the back end of the defense. They obviously have a great cornerback in Brandon Flowers. They have a number one wide receiver in Dwayne Bowe. They have a great, great pass rusher in Samba Halle. They have a great running back in Jamal Charles. So do you guys think Alex Smith is a final piece to help the Chiefs sort of achieve playoff sort of contender status again? I mean, I think, I hope so anyway, because I think if they get above 500, the 49ers' third round pick from the Chiefs next year turns into a second round pick, so I hope.
With that, you know, I mean, the great thing with it is that, you know, when Andy's coming in, what he
between. There's no, you know, let me flip the coin and see which way I want to go. And I think that's what, you know, what they have in, you know, in Kansas City is either you're here or you're gone right now.
Well, you know, Kevin from and Neil both that one of the things about Kansas City is a great football town, and if they can just get a little hot, if they can just show those fans a little, just a little improvement, that fan base is tremendous. And when you go into that stadium and it's a sea of red in there, and you know the Jets fly over and they sing and the home of the and everybody goes, Chiefs, it is a electric environment. That stadium, you know, really can be a true home field advantage for Kansas City. But the fans have to believe that they have hope, too.
Yeah, I think fans, you know, it is a very good situation. Kevin talked about Andy Reid and needing a break. And you look at this situation, and Andy Reid, first of all, from a playing point of view, coming in with a roster that's, got some pro bowlers on it, as I mentioned earlier, but then you've got the great fan support, as Jeff said, if you can just light a fire under the team a little bit. But what you don't get in Kansas City is this, the circus that goes back to, like we talked with the New York Jets or the Dallas Cowboys. It's a team that doesn't attract that kind of attention. So I think in that aspect, everyone always wants to win now in the NFL, and you know, there is no five-year plan, but I do think that Dorsey and Andy Reid are on the same page. They're cut from the same cloth, and so they will be working together on a longer-term goal rather than just, well, let's try and get all in now to win this season. I don't think it's that kind of timetable in Kansas City.
Yeah, now a player that was brought up earlier on was Danny Amendola. He's obviously gone to the Patriots now, and St. Louis brought in Tavon Austin to replace him at the wide receiver position, and he'll offer them something different, that's for sure. And he seems to be headlining a sort of new emphasis on speed by the Rams, and that was further enhanced when they brought in Ogletree speed on the defence as well. What do you think of this sort of new approach by the Rams, emphasising on speed?
Well, you know what, I think Jeff's done a good job there. I think that was tough situation when he took it over. Obviously, they had very little outside that could run. They had very little dynamic playmaker ability on offense. Bradford was having to do way too much and getting hit way too many times. But I think Jeff's approach has been a good one. And, you know, anytime you have guys who can run, and I think it's the case in basketball, I think it's the case in baseball, and every sport is, speed is the great equalizer. It is the thing that can change a game. And the Rams have gone out and they have brought those types of guys into camp now, into the fold, and I think that's going to really make them a much better team. Now, I saw something the other day that picked up to go to the playoffs. I'm not ready to make that kind of statement yet. I think there's going to be some wait and see involved with the Rams, but obviously, they should be a more dynamic team. They should have some field stretchers. Amendola is a good player, don't get me wrong, but he did not have and does not have the ability to change a game with one play, to catch a ball, make a guy miss, and take the thing 70 yards for the touchdown, which in today's NFL, one of the things that really, really is an indicator of winning, we talk about turnovers all the time, but it's explosive plays. You know, talking about passes of over 30 yards, runs of over 20 yards. Well, the Rams now have got a roster with some guys on it that can make explosive plays.
Yeah, I think I really like where the Rams are going. I think Les Snead has done a really good job over the last two drafts. I love what Jeff Fisher's bringing to that team. You look at what he did last year with Janoris Jenkins, you know, the game in San Francisco. You break a team rule, well, first of all, you're not playing, and I'm going to make you run stadium steps. Now, that's a risky move. That's a thing you might try as a coach with a high school team. You know, does that work with highly paid professionals? Probably not a lot of the time, but for some reason, Jeff Fisher has that standing in the game, the respect. It worked. He got the best out of those players. In fact, the only game they didn't turn up at last year was probably the Wembley game, but they've improved consistently. They are physical and tough on defense. They play with an edge. Big difference
for me is if they can upgrade the offensive line. They've got Barrett Jones, the center, who has played all three positions at Alabama, and Jake Long obviously coming in. I really think, given time to throw the ball and given more weapons around him, I do think Sam Bradford can be very, very special. So I think this is a team on the rise, and I do think that it, first of all, you point to the coach, Jeff Fisher, and the job he's done there.
Great division. I mean, I think that division is, you know, a couple of years ago, the last spot. So that has completely changed as far as when you look at the division. For me, it just a case of who becomes the bell cow. Who's that guy that, you know, when it's third and short, who do you get the ball to that can get you that yard that you have for years with Steven Jackson? For me, that's the thing that, you know, that will help Steve, you know, will help Bradford out, will help the team out. It's finding that dependable guy that they can use when they need to get that those short yards. A lot of work that Jeff talked about, the speed, you know, that has been a thing that they've added and continue to add on to, but it's just having that back, who's going to be that back. You know, last year, this guy, Pete, really didn't live up to it, so can he live up to it now?
Isaiah Pete was such a non-factor last year that Darryl Richardson, the sixth-round guy, was the man, really. And Kev's right, because Richardson is a speed guy as well, or certainly came across that way. They don't have that drive finisher that they've had for a number of years.
Yeah, and I've actually got a question. It's not actually been settled yet, this question, I suppose, so we can't really speculate on where this guy is going to go. But I think Charles Woodson, I think he'll fit your definition of great, Neil. I mean, he's had such a wonderful career, but he still hasn't found a home. And someone like Woodson, you have to think that maybe a playoff team, maybe a team just looking for a little bit more leadership. I mean, where does Woodson go? What kind of team do you think suits him?
One of the draft picks that particularly interested me was when the Detroit Lions selected Ziggy Ansah, the defensive end from BYU. Now, you can't deny the natural ability the guy possesses, but the fact is he's only had 1 year starting in a team, and he'd only played for a couple of years before that as well. Now, while I suppose there is a risk element with every draft pick to a degree, I mean, just ask Ryan Leaf in San Diego, I suppose, do you think it's a bit too much of a risk taking a guy with so little experience in the top five in the draft?
I'm going to tell you what now. If you're the Lions and
have the people inside that they have with Sue and Fairley. And really, you know, they've got to see if this kid can do what he did, can transfer what he did as a senior at BYU, because you're exactly right. He came into his senior season having made 7 tackles as a college football player. And again, he's born in Africa, came to the United States as a basketball player, went to BYU as a basketball player, made that transition. But guys, the guy can freaking fly. And his short burst change, which is one of the things you really look for in pass rushers and defensive linemen, he had the fastest one at the combine, 4.26, for his position. Now, that doesn't make him a player, but if he can somehow translate that, even if it's just as a situational pass rusher, into, you know, the National Football League as a rookie, then I think the Lions have made a great selection. If he's one of those guys that comes in and the game's too big for him and too much adjustment, then it's a huge risk, but could be a huge reward, too, if they can find that edge rusher that they need.
One of the guys mentioned earlier molding a piece of clay, and I think when you look at, as Kev mentioned earlier, athletes, you know, you can't coach the speed, the explosion, the athleticism. You can't coach that. Now, you can coach technique and you can coach all that other stuff, but you have to have those raw materials, and I think we're seeing more and more of it. Jason Pierre-Paul is an example from a few years back. Kyle Long, the first-round draft pick of the Chicago Bears, what, 4 or 5 starts at a Division I school? Cordell Patterson, who we mentioned earlier in this podcast, just 1 year at Tennessee. I think teams are willing to roll the dice a little bit more on a great athlete.
Yeah, and as you say, I mean, Ziggy Ansah's a great story. In fact, me and Jonathan spoke to Kyle Van Noy. To be honest, I think he'll be a first-round pick from BYU next year too. But he was the roommate of Ziggy Ansah, and he's been credited with sort of helping him learn the game and get used to the country of America, obviously. And when we spoke to him, some of the stories he told were incredible, that when he first came to practice, Ziggy Ansah, and he had his pads on backwards, he didn't understand any of the play calls, so it's amazing to think that already he's an NFL player and top 5 pick, but...
He's like Forrest Gump, huh?
Yes, exactly.
You know what? I'm glad you brought that up about the kid. You know, here's the thing. For the first time ever, there were 10 guys drafted in the National Football League that were not born in America. Non-Native Americans drafted in the NFL. Finally, the NFL is starting to wake up to the fact that there are players from all over the world that can play this game. And it's not somehow endemic to just, if you're an American kid, you can play it, and if you're an English kid or an African kid or whatever, you can somehow are a second-class citizen. I think that's really this kind of kid, Menelik Watson, Bjorn Werner, those kids are starting to open the eyes of NFL personnel people, and finally these guys are starting to, if they can now take these draft choice spots and translate them into Pro Bowl selections, then I think that it's great for football around the world.
Yeah, and Jeff, obviously you mentioned non-American prospects. I have to bring up Margus Hunt, obviously another one of your former players, the guy you coached. Obviously, as you know, when we interviewed him, you gave us a good luck message for him, and he had some good words about you too, Jeff, but Margus Hunt to the Bengals, is that a good fit?
I think it's a good fit because, you know, the kid, as much like Ziggy Ansah, is a true athlete. There are not very many guys walking around the planet that are 6'8", 280 pounds, and can run 4.6 and can bench press 225 pounds 35 times. I mean, those guys just don't exist. Now, is he a polished, finished product right now? No. The kid's only played 4 years of football. As a matter of fact, the first football game he ever saw, he played in. The first live game he ever saw, he played in. So he's got a long way to go, but he's got the tools. He's got again that piece of clay we talk about that has specialness to him. And again, you're not talking about a kid here. You're talking about a grown man. He's 25 years old. He served in the Estonian Armed Forces. He's competed on the world's class stage as a hammer thrower. He's been an Olympian. These guys are not going to go into the locker room and be intimidated in some way because there's a bunch of world-class athletes in there. They know they belong, and they'll, you know, if you give them time and you give them coaching and you give them patience, they have the ability to take that skill set and really be fine players.
And he doesn't have to be that E. Milner type who's replacing an all-pro potential legend in Darrell Revis. He doesn't have to be that on a Bengals team that's already got a really good front seven and a really good defensive line. He can be one contributing part, which is, for a rookie, that's great because he can just concentrate on his job and contribute to the team. He doesn't have to go in there and feel like he's the guy. And also, he can be an early impact player on special teams as well. So that's something to look out for.
That's a great observation, Neil, because, again, the guy blocked. He set the all-time college football record. That's a lot of guys playing college football for block kicks. And if he can block a couple field goals and gets five sacks as a rookie, I'm going to say that's a great draft pick by them. He'll be a situational guy, play in the nickel package, play in the pass rush situation, and learn how to be an every down player.
I'd like to talk about my team, the Houston Texans. Just a couple of questions about them. They're a solid playoff team, and they've now added the aforementioned Ed Reed at safety, and they also brought in DeAndre Hopkins to fill that much needed wide receiver position across from Andre Johnson. Now I want you to give me some hope here. Do you think they've got enough to go any further than they did last time around?
That little missing piece in this football team offensively. I think that, you know, when you look at the other side of the ball, now, you know, they've got some guys they got to get back healthy again. But Wade Phillips has done a tremendous job. It wasn't very long ago that we were looking at the Houston Texans and saying they'll never get to the playoffs because they can't play good enough defense. Well, I think Wade's kind of cured that. And, you know, as they start to keep, it's the second year now in a new system, second year in that 3-4 system after being in the 4-3 for years and years and years, that I think that this team is headed in the right direction. And then you add that Ed Reed factor, that leadership, that savvy, that toughness, that, you know, winning pedigree that he brings to your back end. I think this is a team that now is amongst those 8 or 10 teams in the NFL that has a legitimate chance to get to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I agree with that totally, and hopefully it works out well. And also, the Texans have been boosted by the return of inside linebacker Brian Cushing after a long injury. Just how crucial do you think he is to the Texans' chance of success?
Rare ones, because they do play hard.
Yeah, and obviously we're looking to the future, so I suppose these predictions could look ridiculous in a few months' time, but I'd like to get all of your opinions on some potential breakout teams and players for this season. Now, personally, my breakout player is David Wilson, the running back for the New York Giants, and my breakout team is the Carolina Panthers. But I'll start with you, Kev. Any players or teams you think are going to make huge strides?
See, I'm standing with the home side here on who I think can get it done. I like what they've done in Minnesota. Even though they were a successful team last year, we talked about coming alive this year. I like what they've done with Cam as well. But if I have somebody jumping out at me right now, I have to say that.
My deal is the
go not on Darryl Revis, and, you know, the Bucks are going to go on Josh Freeman. How much better is he going to be? Because in my opinion, he's one of those guys with all the physical attributes you look for, but, you know, he hasn't done it like a quarterback. I mean, there's a big difference in my mind between when you look at those elite teams and what the quarterbacks on those teams have done compared to what Josh Freeman's done. Not to say that he can't, but I think the Bucks' hopes are tied way more to Josh Freeman than they are to Darryl Revis.
You see, guys, this week we've given you some great insight into how we work on Sky Sports, because between the three of us there, we've covered off about 19 teams.
Of course.
We're going to be right somewhere.
Well, in response to that, I'm now going to put your expertise to the test, or complete guesswork, whatever one you would rather go for. But I want to know from all of you, what game are we going to see at Super Bowl 48? Don't sit in the fence. There's spikes on it and everything, it'll hurt.
I'm going to say we're going to see San Francisco back there.
Yes.
Hugely talented roster. We're going to see San Francisco against Denver.
Great pick.
Dream, I suppose. So all these predictions written down will be stored away and brought out again next year. That's the paper folding as we speak.
Yeah, well, I suppose, as you mentioned, with Green Bay as potential Super Bowl contenders, I think they play the 49ers week 2 or 3, so I think that'll be a big indicator of who's going to reach the Super Bowl. Sky Sports, you guys are going to be lucky with some of the very early games anyway. I mean, the one thing that stood out at me, you know, looking at the schedule this year is there's some blockbuster games very early in the season that should excite everyone.
Well, I'm going to tell you what, if you got a chance to listen to lot of that has to do with what Sky's done and frankly, Neil and Dev have done, you know, bringing the games to the fans.
Yeah, I mean, something else you're involved in as well is, of course, the NFL Roadshow. Last time we had you on, Jeff, you were just about to start that one with members of the Vikings team and, of course, Neil Reynolds. How did these roadshows go, and have you got any more lined up for the near future?
Well, I tell you what, I thought they went extremely well. They were sold out everywhere we went from, you know, from Ireland through Scotland, you know, all the UK. Tremendous, tremendous turnout the last night in Wembley. And I know Neil's gotten to have the pleasure of having, you know, that young quarterback named Luck from Indianapolis in London. Correct, Neil?
Yeah, I think the Andrew Luck one is. So we got Andrew Luck in London on Friday, and that is just incredible to me. I'll just give you an example, guys, of where we are. I think with the sport in the UK. So, 1998, I was working for First Down newspaper. I was going down to Crystal Palace to cover the England Monarchs. It was the last year of the Monarchs. Now, this is not a knock on the Monarchs or their fans. I absolutely love the London Monarchs and the whole NFL Europe. Jeff will back me up on that. You know, I was a huge fan. I worked for many years in NFL Europe, and it's a special league, and it was a special time. But the London Monarchs, in their final season, were drawing about 3,000 fans to their games, to actually watch a game of football. We had, in this past week, 3,600 applications for tickets to watch Andrew Luck talk football on a stage. He's not going to play football, he's going to sit on a chair and talk football, and already, you know, in excess of the number of people that were coming and watching the Monarchs at the end. It's another indication of the growth of the sport in this country. I'm very lucky to host them. And it's just a great chance for us to get out and to meet and be around the fans, because without the fan support, we wouldn't be able to do them in the first place. You know, we would not be in the position where we have people like Andrew Luck coming over or later this summer, Ben Roethlisberger. You know, these things wouldn't be happening, and it's because the fan support in this country continues to grow and grow.
And a lot of kudos go to the people at NFL UK for having the courage. Really, frankly, and you know as well as I do, because you were a part of it, when Alistair Kirkwood convinced the NFL to put a game in London, you know, a lot of people said, well, that's the end of his career, because they'll go over there, that'll flop, and then he'll be done. And now that you have, you know, again, 10 years ago, they would have said this cannot happen. To sell out two NFL games within a month at Wembley Stadium is a huge accomplishment, not only for everybody involved in that Sky for broadcasting it, for the NFL UK for promoting it, and for the fans for buying the tickets. That says more than a volume about what's happening with the game in the UK, and hopefully that won't get lost on some potential owner down the road that is looking for a place to put a franchise.
Yeah, well, we had an interview with Alistair Kirkwood, I can't remember, Jonathan might remember, I think it was about six, seven weeks ago, and he said if it happens, he expects a London franchise or a UK franchise in the next 10 years, so hopefully it happens.
Well, I'd be a big fan of it.
Robert Kraft, he said he wanted it to happen in the next 8 years. That's a powerful owner right there. You know, there's a groundswell. There's more eyes from New York on what's happening in the UK than ever before. I know that for a fact, and that means that, you know, I think there's going to be more opportunities for the sport to grow in this country.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's pretty much a perfect way to end the show. I mean, you guys have given us like almost an hour and a half of material. It's flew in. I can't believe it's been that much time. But once again, guys, thanks so much. Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Neil. And thanks, Jeff, for joining the show. And I'll let you wrap it up, Johnny.
Yeah, I mean, thanks, guys, for coming on. I'm sure everyone will absolutely love listening to you. It's been a bit surreal, all three of you at once, the Sky Dream Team. But thanks again.
Thank you. Welcome very much, guys. Always a pleasure to be around my guys.
All right, fellas.
Okay.
All right. Take care, fellas.
Bye-bye.
See you later. Thanks.
Bye.
Yeah, so a huge thanks to Jeff Reinbold, Neil Reynolds, and of course Kevin Cadle, all for joining us there. As Colin said, an hour and a half worth of material. They've given up their time, and we thank them very much for that. Yeah, as you said, it's flown by, so now I've just got to do the usual formalities at the end. Don't forget to keep checking into v2journal.com for all your regular American football articles up there, and of course all the other sports too. Twitter at CLamentSport at Jonathan J. Moore, and you can get the podcast at Press Coverage V2. And sadly, that is this show over, and all that remains is for Colin to say
goodbye.
And goodbye from me too. See you next time.